TSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 270. I'm your host, Stefan Christoff. Thanks for tuning in. On this program, we will hear from Mohammed Khazir, who is a member of the Palestine Solidarity Collective in the UK. I thought it would be meaningful to share a spotlight on an important and interesting initiative to build solidarity with the Palestinian people in the context of the UK. Of course, London has been a center of massive solidarity demonstrations with Palestine over the last years as the Israeli state has unleashed a genocidal military assault on the people of Gaza, Palestine. And in parallel to these massive protests, there's a lot of different collectives that have launched. Mohammed is part of one. It's called the Palestine Collective, which works primarily within design and architectural spaces in the UK. And Mohammed has been really involved in this project. And I wanted to share a conversation and create a little window into a Palestine Solidarity Initiative in the UK. Thank you to Hazem Jimjoum for the connection. And here's my conversation with Mohammed.
So around the world in cities, there's been this unprecedented mobilization, really at a grassroots level for Palestine. You're in the UK, in a town just north of London, Peterborough, where you have a very strong immigrant community, many diverse diasporas. And I understand there's been a pretty significant mobilization, not just in the centers of major cities, but also in smaller cities. Maybe you could introduce yourself and speak a little bit about how you've organized in your context, why it's been important for you, and just also describe for people who are not familiar with the geography of where you are, like how it's been and how it's looked, the protests and the mobilizations.
In England, obviously, London is our capital. We have, you know, we've had huge demonstrations in London. And my name's Mohammed Khazir. I helped set up the Palestine Collective in October 2023. And really, our aim is quite specific. It's to try and normalize support for Palestine in the architectural, design, creative, and academic industries. So we are a collective of creatives and, you know, some of the most talented people I've ever met. And we realized that when October the 7th happened and the events, you know, since, people in design industries and architectural industry and academia especially were somewhat silenced and somewhat scared to speak out. I actually have a personal kind of memory. I lecture at the University of Sheffield, and I went to speak to one of the staff members about, you know, the Palestine Collective, because he was actually one of my lecturers when I studied at Sheffield. And he was all about radical decolonization. So I thought, well, he's the perfect guy to talk about the events going on today in Palestine. And at the moment I started talking about the topic, he sort of said, you know, asked me to close the door behind him so no one else could hear. You know, because he was worried what would happen about, you know, to his job, to his work, if people knew he was talking about this. Now, this felt very strange to me because in England, you know, we have, you know, freedom of expression, freedom of speech. And it felt like the first time in my life, you know, where this was an issue now. You know, we couldn't talk openly about a genocide happening in real time. And I studied, you know, I remember studying history GCSE, you know, the mantra that was kind of drummed into us was any Holocaust must not happen again, you know, and we must speak up, you know, and so it felt like, well, here's a real life situation. Here are these lecturers that, and academics that I revere, and they are, you know, not through no fault of their own, but they are sort of silenced from speaking. That was the provocation for setting up the collective. Is in our space, which is quite a small kind of community, you know, the architectural, the design community, how can we in our community do something where we can normal I support Palestine. And so that was the idea behind it. And you talk about sort of organizing, and the way we've organized ourselves has really been digital. We hold meetings and we have people from all over the country joining. We've had a lot of our events mainly in London. We've got some events we're planning now in Birmingham, which is, for people who aren't fully aware of the UK, slightly more west of the country. London is sort of southeast. Our flagship event that happened was we had a collaboration with, after about 8 months of us being together, planning events, doing talks around England, around London, holding space for people to talk about Palestine. We were able to secure a collaboration with the London Festival of Architecture, which runs for a month in around June time. Now, this was a big thing because this somewhat legitimized us as a collective and our mission, and it gave us a huge amount of confidence. And for 2 days, we held an exhibition in London where members of the design community, the architectural community, came and witnessed our exhibition on the domesticity of Palestine. So this was, for us, a huge confidence boost. One of our most flagship moments, I suppose, and the amount of interest we had in those 2 days secured for us that what we were doing was really important. And people were crying out for that kind of a space to express what they're feeling without being judged.
So in terms of flipping narratives on their head, a lot of what's happened this last year is on the streets, it's in person. Of course, like you mentioned, technologies of communication, like online meetings and social media, has played a role. But the push and pull of actually being in the city spaces, within, you know, institutional spaces, and pushing out and really creating space for Palestine has been really important in the UK. And I'm thinking about the ways that the mass protests in London actually successfully pushed back. They had tried to really halt them, right? And this is a pretty significant, I think, moment that I feel needs to be underlined, is talking about how people successfully were able to take the streets despite the repression, right? And that was over a few of different examples, different dates. One of them was, quote unquote, Remembrance Day in the fall of 2023. In the fall of 2023, but I know that there was others where there was this attempt to really silence the groundswell of mobilization in the center of London, where people were coming from different municipalities really to show this mass opposition to genocide in Palestine.
Yeah, exactly, Stefan. And, you know, we went to a few of these rallies, these protests ourselves. They were absolutely immense, and they were just wonderful. There was sort of, you know, there's one wonderful atmosphere, you know, and we really felt like we were together in this cause. So yeah, absolutely, I agree.
But I don't think that people get a sense of how difficult it was to actually refuse the attempts to silence those protests, right? Like yourselves and others, a lot of people actually decided to go back and to challenge the demands from government authorities at the highest level, who are saying, don't come out on the streets. But hundreds of thousands of people did. Can you talk about why that was important for you and also for society more generally in terms of diaspora communities taking space?
Yeah, we did have that. There was a period, a significant few months, where British politicians were speaking out against this. And there was a lot of polarization in British politics, in British media, about the situation, you know, trying to make it an us and them situation. You know, for example, you remember you mentioned Remembrance Day, you know, and that narrative seemed to feed into this idea of extremes, you know, that these guys are against us, they're against British values, which absolutely is not the case. You know, British values are, you know, the freedom of expression and the freedom of protest, and so I suppose I can only speak for myself, but my own feeling in regards to this was that the number of people at a very kind of physical base level is, you know, is not something that can really be it's hard to resist, let's say, and B, you know, just that the point of, you know, the a fundamental right of a British citizen is their freedom of expression. And, you know, so I think those values kind of won out in the end. And I think people in England are pretty clued on. You know, I think everyone, I mean, I've actually never met anyone who disputes the horrors that are going on. You know, there's no one that really disagrees that what's going on is wrong, is abhorrent, on a public level. You know, so it really is from an institutional level or a governmental level where these rules are being imposed on academics, architects, creatives, even obviously outside of these industries. That's my view on it.
Well, it's also seems to be mirrored in other places, which is, you know, these sort of quote unquote values of, you know, being out to express yourself is allowed for some and not for others, right? And that pushback, the challenge, limitations on, you know, people's ability to speak up for Palestine was really important. And I know that happened also in other fields, and you've talked about your work in architecture and the academic institutions. So speak a little bit more about why sort of pushing out and creating space, for example, at London Architecture Week and other contexts, was important for you. And to say the words Palestine and talk also about the geography of occupation, the geography of genocide. I mean, there is a very specific plan in terms of reprogramming territory. And that's, of course, linked to colonial frameworks, the Israeli state. But that's, you know, also tied to other colonial histories. If we're thinking about the subcontinent, if we're thinking about, you know, British colonialism in Kenya, South Africa, you know, these patterns and sort of processes are not unique, and they're tied to a whole history. So anything you'd like to say about that?
Yeah, you're right, Stefan. And, you know, just to say that when we set up the collective, we were quite conscious of this polarizing this event seemed to make people. And we were very keen to not partake in that kind of conversation. For example, Hazem, who was one of our speakers, absolutely brilliant speaker. We actually hosted an event around one of his presentations, which was kind of like the A to Z of Zionism, you know, the history of Zionism. And it was incredibly factual. You know, there was no emotive or political swing to his talk, you know, and that's something we aim to do with our events. We don't want to switch people off who may have, for whatever reason, been miscommunicated by the media, by the British media, or online, that what Israel is doing is in any way justifiable. I believe to combat that kind of perception that people may have, it's incredibly important to listen to them. So, you know, we're talking about freedom of speech. You know, as much as it's our right to speak for what we believe in, we have to accept that everyone has their point of view, and that even if they are not believing in the same way we're believing, you know, they may, for whatever reason, have the wrong information and be not as sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. It's our job to not to switch them off or to have a kind of knee-jerk reaction to that. It's our job to be incredibly good listeners and be patient in communicating our point of view. And in that way, people who may be sitting on the fence or maybe on the other side, which is a weird thing to say because we're talking about polarization, but that does seem to be the reality, they are more likely to, you know, listen to us and engage with us. And so that's how we try and curate our events.
So about the events and the process that you're a part of, name again your collective and just speak a little bit more about, you know, the space that you're trying to create in this project, through this project.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are the Palestine Collective. We set up in October 2023, and the space we're trying to create is within architecture and design industries, and trying to remind people of this value of freedom of expression, to stand up for what's right. And the way we do that is every sort of 2 or 3 months, you know, by the way, we're all kind of students, people who've just finished university, people who've just entered the workforce. So we've got our kind of jobs and things going on in the background, you know, so we do this as and when we can. But this was our way to express our frustration. We have people in the collective who, in their professions, their workplaces were refusing to speak about this issue. And they felt isolated. So we have kind of, it seems like we're sort of this group of individuals who does feel a bit frustrated about that, about the way that people are not willing to engage in this conversation. So the way we manifest that really is every 2 to 3 months, we have been holding events. Some of them have been lectures, some talks. We have like a lecture series going on. We have a brilliant graphic designer, Victoria, who hopefully you'll get to speak to eventually, Stefano, but she unfortunately couldn't be at this interview today. But she, you know, we've got people like Barrera and Lucy, these amazing, amazingly talented individuals who are helping, you know, we're just ordinary people. We're just trying to facilitate a space where people can come to these events and talk openly. And to be honest, Stefan, it wasn't something we consciously were aware of when we set up our first talk. Our first talk was hosted at the London School of Architecture, and we just, you know, had never organized a talk before. So we did our best. We invited people. We got like an Eventbrite. We set up an Instagram, all that stuff. We got 100 people to come down, which is amazing. And we realized that it was actually the bit before the talk and the bit slightly after the talk where people were mingling that a lot of these conversations were taking place. And people had come down who were just curious, but they weren't necessarily for or against, but they were just curious about what was going on. And they wanted to hear someone else's perspective. And it was those conversations that we realized, wow, our events, yes, we have the flagship speaker, the, you know, but actually it's the moment before and the moment after the Q&A where people get a chance to really exchange ideas, and we get to really talk to people, and they feel like this is, it feels like a little bit of a family, you know, not to get too sentimental about it, but it feels like a little bit of a family. You know, we can all talk about this, and we usually have like bake sales, we usually have food and stuff like this, and it really becomes quite a nice festive atmosphere.
So your work is focused around architecture and design. And I think it's important to just name that there is an element around architecture and architecture of occupation, the architecture of the military-industrial complex of the Israeli state that's playing out in Palestine. Do you have anything to share about this?
Yeah. So of course, the situation we're seeing, you know, is a situation where we're seeing the mass, obviously the mass destruction of life, but also the erasure of space and the erasure of a culture and a heritage. And all of these themes are sort of linked, you know, geography, the geography of Palestine. And so when we have our talks, when we have our exhibitions, these are inherent. I mean, it's inherent, isn't it? I suppose in occupation that these things are violated, you know, these sacred things are violated. And so it's sort of become inherent. There's been a very strong element of that in our events, but really I think what we've really hit on is we simply want to make that space to have those conversations. And our sort of end goal really is to get some reaction from the Royal Institute of British Architects, for example, who we have been, you know, communicating with and trying to make something happen there. So what I'm saying is we're trying to go from, we're trying to really reach for the institutions that are imposing this sort of censorship, let's call it that, and we're really trying to break that paradigm. That's what we're trying to do. If people can speak openly and freely about what's going on and not feel ostracized, then you know, that is a dream of mine. You know, if it's something we can have some way of having an effect on that dynamic.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak today, Mohammed.
Thank you, Stefan. Thank you so much.
That was a conversation with Mohammed Khazir of the Palestine Collective in the UK. You can learn more about them. Just look up Palestine Collective on social media. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm your host, Stefan Christoph. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. On CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. On CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. On CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. On CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. On Met Radio, 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. On CKCU, 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. And now on CJSF, 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Just look us up, search Free City Radio on your favorite podcast platform. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.